Good evening, good evening. What's going on, Fair Trade Cafe? Happy Wednesday. We're happy you're here. If you guys are just hanging out in this coffee shop, you're like, who's this lady yelling at me? What's up? My name's Jesse. I'm the host of Chatterbox. You'll meet my co-host here formally in a minute. He gave you an announcement earlier. But yeah, so this is Chatterbox. We're a storytelling open mic. We do this show every Wednesday. It is a storytelling show, so these are real life stories about your real life. So these are stories about your real life. We have a theme every week. Tonight's theme is once in a lifetime. So this could be anything that happens to you once in a lifetime, something dramatic, I'm hoping. So we've got two more slots left. So if you're interested in telling, stories should be about 6 to 8 minutes long. At 6 minutes, you'll see Estevan or myself hold a number two up on our phones, so you know that you have some time to kind of wrap up your story. After 2 minutes, you'll see a zero or Estevan just like kind of creeping towards you so he can carry you outside. Either way, you guys choose. All right, so other than that, we're here to have a fun night. Guys, put your hands together for Fair Trade Cafe and the baristas. Yeah, tip your baristas. And put your hands together for Jared, our podcast producer. Woo! We've got a podcast. It's called ChatterPod. I know the name isn't really... It's so original, guys. ChatterPod. Okay. But yeah, so we have this podcast. You can check it out. There's a lot more stories on there besides the ones that'll be told tonight. So check that out if you haven't already. It's anywhere you listen to podcasts and on Hoot and Waddle's website. All right. So I'm going to go ahead and just get this show started. Let's bring a regular up to the stage. Put your hands together for Damien.
Okay, so before I tell... Wow, that's interesting sound. Before I tell my story, I'm going to ask real quick, has anyone in the audience seen the Netflix series Castlevania? Awesome. Based on one of the best games ever. Yes, it especially counts if you played the game. Awesome. So, like, I thought of this, like, as I was... as the announcement was happening, but there's a particular scene in Season 2... where one of the main characters, Sypha, says that her nomadic people, speakers, are the enemies of God, by attempting to maintain human cooperation through learning all languages and sharing all stories. And then, as a comedic throwaway line in that scene, something starts rumbling because, you know, vampires, and she's like, "See, God hates me." So, really funny line. And that was a very poor attempt to try to align that to the nature of this story. Personally, I don't really believe in any God. But if there is a God, I'm pretty sure he hates me, but not enough to kill me. Because I have had numerous once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, all of which have been wasted. Not always on my fault, though. So, example... When I was in high school, freshman year, my parents decided to go on this heavy metal cruise called 70,000 Tons of Metal. You get to go on this badass cruise ship, sail around the Caribbean to an actual pirate island, awesome, called Grand Turk. And all the while, on the ship, there are numerous stages of like some of the best and most awesome heavy metal bands from around the world. So you got bands like Sabaton, Iron Maiden was on there, but like them. Necrogoblicon, I don't know if anyone's heard of them, but they're hilarious. They have a little goblin dude. It's Leaves Eyes, there's probably like two people in this entire audience that have heard of those bands. But super awesome thing, right? And I've been a metalhead since I was old enough to listen to things. But it was a 21 and over event, so I couldn't go. And my parents had saved up for years in order to go on this trip. So I had to stay at home with my weird-ass uncle and watch horror movies. So just like, aw, okay. VHS is a pretty cool movie, but it is. But I really wish I could be, you know, getting in a mosh pit slash hot tub with all these awesome bands. So that was one of them. A more recent one, which was frankly the most disappointing in a really long time, was that if you were here when I did Secret Weapon, you'll know that I do a lot of voices. And for a very long time, I wanted to be a voice actor because of all the different crazy freaking voices I could do. I actually had an opportunity to do that. My sister, who works in LA, had a contact who was attempting to get a show off the ground for Adult Swim about this kind of like cartoon sketch comedy type thing. She gave him my contact information. He contacted me. We actually had plans to go through with this. And then I said, okay, where do we go now? Never heard from him again. Ever. Every other week, even, I would just like message this guy, be like, hey, where are we going with this? Is this still happening? Is this still a thing? Just crickets every time. So that's why I say God hates me, but not enough to kill me. Although, I will say, ooh, another one just popped into my head. I wasn't going to say this one because I hadn't thought of it until now. If anyone who's seen me up here before probably knows that I also like to write. Senior year of high school, I entered a playwriting competition. The winner would have their play shown at the Pleasure Feast at the Renaissance Festival. And you would get to stage manage and direct and to have like the big boy job. And I was so hyped for this. I spent hours and hours sleeping over this play that I honestly thought was freaking hilarious. And I turned it into my teacher saying, okay, I'm ready to enter this competition. And she thought it was hilarious. Read it to the class. We actually did a performance in class. And I think we did one in the auditorium, but it was just like an open reading thing. And, like, everyone was like, awesome, we're going to get to go to the Renaissance Festival. Second place! Which is still awesome, but damn did I feel hollow after that. Second place. And it was like, if you read it, ever read it, which it's not posted anywhere, but I don't know, maybe that'll be a thing. It's like one of the most meta comedies ever. It's like, you know, super basic story of brother and sister are, like, you know, they're traveling somewhere in a carriage, and then, you know, they hit a bump on the road, kid falls out, they're being chased by hogs or some crap, I forget, and they get separated. This brother and this sister get separated. The sister gets to, you know, live in this, you know, big fancy castle. Brother is left in the forest to die, but he's found and raised by elves, and these elves are the biggest assholes you will ever meet. Like, the second they found him, they were just like, neat. And, why am I explaining the entire plot? This is about once in a lifetime, right? Yeah, super, super meta comedy, but a lot of people really liked it, and I was super bummed out when I only got second place, which is still really good, but seriously, second place. Let me think of one more before Estevan, like, physically throws me out of this building. Let's see. Also in high school, there was, trying to place it right now, there was a thing. I'm blanking. I can't remember. Yeah, moral of the story. God's kind of salty towards me, and I'm kind of salty towards him. So, yeah, I'm done. I just rambled. Didn't have a plan. I just rambled the whole time.
One more time for Damien, please. I'm having like a surreal moment right now. Hi, my name is Estevan. I'm your co-host here at Chatterbox. My name's Estevan Pina. If you don't speak Spanish, that's Steven Pineapple. I answer, you know, to both. It's fine. This is part of the show where I get to be the shameless self-promoter of the show. I can't talk this evening. This is fine. Shameless self-promoter of the show and of our podcast, of which there's now 37 episodes up on iTunes. 37 up on iTunes and Spotify, pretty much everywhere you can listen to podcasts, all hosted by this amazing gentleman seated in the corner right here, Jared. Don't look at him. Don't look at him, though. No applause for Jared. Moving right along, please help me welcome a relatively new, but now a regular to the show. Please help me welcome Jerry, as I say his name correctly. Go, Gary.
I'm proud of you, Esteban. Thank you. I'm very proud of you. Oh, we have a stand now. Oh, okay. It's going to throw me off. Whatever you can find in the dumpster, right? And so, once in a lifetime, huh? I think we've all had some once in a lifetime moments. Like, there was the time I was able to make a hole in one by hitting the golf ball the opposite direction. I still wonder about that sometimes. There was the other time I went to a party I was not invited to and guessed the correct amount of number for, like, those candy jars. It was like 523. I didn't get it, because those things are a scam. Baby showers are a scam. I'm just kidding. but I have to say the biggest once-in-a-lifetime... I wasn't looking at the topic or anything, guys. Don't worry. Moment that I had was... had involved guitars, moms, and RPGs. And I don't mean rocket-propelled grenades. I mean, like the game that people play with paper and a pen. And so, back in high school, I had met a friend who, I'll call him Damien for now, just to keep him anonymous. And we met in financial math class, because that's where all the kids who didn't want to take calculus went to, or weren't good at math, but hey, they're doing their best. And so, me and him really connected, especially through, you know, things such as like D&D and Warhammer 40K, and I can already see I've lost half of my audience because they don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just kidding. but no, just kind of hanging out with him and a couple other friends, and you know, just enjoying the dark humor that we had together. But then, you know, as high school students and just about everybody else after high school, you just don't really see your friends that much anymore, especially those who you only hung out with for a bit, and that was Damien. But I did visit him a while back, right before I started college, just as, you know, because I was trying to catch up with a bunch of friends of mine and see how everybody's doing, and maybe laugh in their faces for the people I didn't like, but hey. Yeah. I really liked Damien, since he was a cool guy. So I went to visit him, and... I always forget he has, like, these really small, like, I think, like, they're corgis, because my mind's blanking about what kind of dogs he had. But they're really, really aggressive, and so they, like, try and bite my ankles every time I come over. But I was visiting him and just trying to see how he was doing, and we just start, you know, conveying all of our... life experiences and our traumas right after high school and just what we're going through. And with that, then we went into just talking about like D&D and Warhammer 40K. But while I was perusing his bathroom, because his bathroom had a really weird layout, and where the door opened... They just say the doorknob wasn't there. It was weird. And so... I see a guitar is, like, in the corner of the bathroom. And so I kind of walk out. I'm like, hey, Damien, like, whose guitar is that? And he says it belonged to his mom. And that, you know, it hasn't been used in years. And the thing with Damien was, before I met him, he had kind of suffered through a really traumatic loss, and where he lost his mom. And his mom, because his mom was fighting cancer at the time. And so... unfortunately, she lost that battle, and ever since then, they kind of just put her stuff away and just kind of tried to deal with the loss. But I guess he could never really put away her guitar, since she was a big music fanatic. And so, me being me at the time, I was just learning how to play the guitar and how to just play up other instruments and sing and whatnot. And so he just kind of lets me open up the guitar and just kind of start tuning it. But I can tell that he just gets really, really dead silent when I just start just plucking it here and there. And I ask him, is it okay if I play it? And he just kind of, you know, nods yes. And so, you know, I just do a couple like little riffs from like songs by Angus and Julia Stone, the Lumineers, just little things. And I just stop, and I can see he's just kind of trying to hold in tears. And that was just kind of my once in a lifetime experience, and how not only music can affect people, just the connection that I can create between two people, just like him and his mom when she used to play for him when he was young. And I just felt so I want to use the right word here, privileged or honored that he let me play his mom's guitar for him, and to help him bring that back, that sweet memory for him of his mom. And you know, I can see that it just kind of relieved him to really see that old dusty guitar to be used again. And I think after that day, he told me that he wanted to try and learn how to play guitar. And I thought that was just really wonderful, just for him to try and learn that and just kind of reconnect with his roots and kind of pay a homage to his mother. And so I have to say that was my great one-in-a-lifetime experience for a friend.
Guys, keep it going for Jerry. Ooh. He's trying to bring the emotions, the second storyteller. I don't know about that. I like it. Thank you for sharing. I think that's wonderful, and I think it can be hard, I think, to remember the good things like that, but having people and friends and family share in that memory and being able to create that space is really wonderful. So, A+ friendship right there. All right, guys, our next storyteller is another regular. Put your hands together for Andrea. You got to let her out first, though, because she's like in the way back. Guys, keep it going. You got to clap the whole time. Come on.
All right. So I've referenced this experience in the past. A few years ago, went on this, just a little recap, went on a really cool road trip with my best friend. We went all up and down the West Coast for like a month, just the two of us. It was a lot of fun. And we had many, 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 many once-in-a-lifetime opportunities, the whole trip being one of them. But one of my favorite experiences was the time that we were in Eugene, Oregon. So if you've never been to Eugene, imagine like Tempe, but colder and more trees. Like that's basically what it is. It's really cool. It's a great little town, totally like a college town because the University of Oregon is there. And so if anyone's like a big sports fan, you know, the Ducks, yada, yada, that's like what they're known for. And when I was there, one of the stories I told, I think one of the first stories I ever told, was about how we met this stranger at a pizza place and she let us stay at her house in Eugene. And while we were there, she had been taking us around and like showing us all the cool places in Eugene and like introducing us to her friends. Well, one of our last, I think it was our last night there, she had to work. So we dropped her off at work. And when we were driving there, I was like, I kind of want to get, like, I want to do something, like, what's something that we should do that we haven't done yet that we need to do before we leave? And she was like, well, you guys need to go and explore the University of Oregon. It's, like, open campus. You can just, like, roam around. And it's the summer, like, there are some kids there, like, students there for the summer months. And we were like, all right, cool. So we got all like, we kind of like looked cute. You know, we wanted to go out on the town and blah, blah, blah. Because we were going to go to Portland the next day, which is like a 3-hour drive. So we get all dressed up and not like prom style or anything, but we look cute. I don't wear makeup, but I put on a little makeup. And I don't know, we were just like feeling ourselves and whatever. We were 20, so we weren't old enough to go to any bars or anything. So we just decided to, you know, stick to this like general area. So we go to the university and we're roaming around. And if you've never been, it's beautiful. There are all these old, like rustic looking buildings. It's just an absolutely gorgeous campus, like so many trees and so much greenery and the track there. I'm like a track nerd. I did track in high school. Ooh, that track is sexy. Ugh. So anyway, and we got to, we didn't know like how much we were allowed to do. There were like some unlocked doors. So we were just like going in and checking out these like empty classrooms. And I don't know, it was really cool. Well, while we were there, we were kind of like getting bored, you know, because there's only so much walking around you can do before you're like, okay, like I gotta have something to do here. And we noticed this very large group of very fancily dressed people. I'm talking like they had like blazers and like some ties and whatever else. Like these people looked like they meant business. And they were walking, they were just on campus. And so Jill's like, do you want to follow them? And I was like, yeah, let's see like where they're going. Like, why are they around walking around the University of Oregon at like 6 p.m.? So we start following them. And we get up to this auditorium. It's actually a very famous auditorium, the one at the University of Oregon. I don't know what it's called, but do you guys know what I'm talking about? So I don't know. They're big on basketball. I don't know sports things, guys. Anyway. So we go up to this auditorium and there's like security and everything. And I'm like, I'm not a rebellious person at all. I'm not like a risk taker. I'm very much like a safe person. So I'm like, what the fuck, Jill? Like, shit. What do we do? And she's like, just act natural. Act like you belong. I'm like, all right. So we just walk in and the security person's like, hello. And we're like, hey. And we're just like, keep walking. And we walk in and like half this is a huge, huge auditorium. And like half of it is like filled, right? And like all these people, it's a weird scene. And like down on the floor on the basketball court, I can tell they're getting ready for some kind of like tournament of some sort. So we start like prying. We're like, hey, like, what's going on here? And they're like, oh, we're getting ready for that dodgeball tournament. And we were like, is it too late to sign up? And they were like, no. So I went down. My friend Jill was wearing like a skirt and she's like, but I'll take videos of you. I was like, okay. So I went and there were like, if you've ever done like a dodgeball tournament, if you don't have a team, you can like sign up to be like, to get into groups of people who don't already have teams. Like they'll just kind of like randomize you together. And so I ended up in this like random team and we got to like talking and I met some really cool people. Like there was this one woman from China. She was like an international student and she was there and she was like, yeah, blah, 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 the conference today. And I was like, what conference are you talking about? She was like, oh, the conference earlier today, you know, the one that we were all at for international students and international teachers and like blah, blah, blah. She was going on and on. And I was like, yeah, we just like walked in here. Like, I don't know, like we didn't know anything. And she was like, it costs like $500 to get into this event. And we were like, and she was like, don't worry, I won't rat you out. And I was like, thank God. But, anyway, I got to play dodgeball with like people from all over the world. That was really cool. And then, We lost like the first round or whatever, but like it was so random. Like these people that were like wearing suits, once the tournament got started, they were putting on like these cow costumes and like all kind, I don't know, it just turned into like a weird like cosplay thing maybe. I don't know what was happening. It was really entertaining though, and they had all kinds of funny names, and it was great. And I was just like in a really nice shirt and makeup and like was wearing nice stuff, and I was trying to like run around in like heels, and it was great. And then afterwards, we got free beer. And again, we were 20, so that was like the coolest thing. And I, again, not a rebellious person, so I was like, what if they ID us? Oh my God, I'm so nervous. And Jill's like, girl, like all of these people look old as hell. They're not gonna, we look like we belong, like you're okay. They're not IDing anyone else. And I was like, all right. So I just go up and I'm like, and I order whatever they have. It's some kind of like hipster Oregon brew on tap that they have. And I'm like, yeah, I'll take a glass of that. And they're just like, okay, yeah. And so I get this, like, I get two free beers and like a free pretzel. And we're just sitting here looking at all these people who are like 100 times better than us because they have like fucking PhDs and whatever else. And they paid a lot of money to be at this conference. And I just got to kind of like play dodgeball with them and mooch off the free beer that they got. And it was great. I feel like no one else has ever had that kind of opportunity. So for me, it was truly a once in a lifetime thing I got to experience. And it was a lot of fun. So thank you.
One more time for Andrea, please. The one thing I wish the people at home, if you will, who just listen to the podcast and don't come out to the show or don't get an opportunity to come out to the show, what's lost in translation is how animated Andrea is when she tells a story. She does a lot with her voice, but like the faces she makes when she's talking from another person's perspective is just phenomenal. Please help me welcome one of the members of the Chatter crew, somebody who is an amazing storyteller. I don't know if you knew this or not, but he's also an amazing poet here in Phoenix and is sitting right over here. Please give a round of applause for Jared.
And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful house. And you may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife. I can't believe we made it four storytellers deep and nobody referenced the Talking Heads yet. So I don't often do storytelling, but when I do it awkwardly. And I just had a relationship come to an end, a four-year relationship. With somebody that I thought this was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, right? And so all that's occurring to me are the things that I thought would be once-in-a-lifetime things that turn out not so much, like getting married. Or, I don't know, other stuff. And, but to not dwell on that, almost all of my great once-in-a-lifetime things happen to have to do with music. And mostly with people that only I'm impressed with because I listen to music for people who are usually older than me. For instance, I was walking down the Mill Avenue Bridge on the correct side of the street for walking with traffic. And I see this group of people coming towards us. This is actually with my... No, not my ex-wife. The relationship after that, and I'm like, what the hell is this? They're like taking up the entire sidewalk. I'm just gonna walk straight through them and like, you know, kind of push them off the sidewalk. And as we get closer to this party of people, I notice that it is Neil Finn and his family. Neil Finn is from Crowded House and Split Ends, if anybody knows who they are. And that's usually the kind of story I have to tell. There's an even better story than that. I do play a little bit of guitar. I would not call myself a professional musician by any means, but you can hear my handiwork on all of the Hoot and Waddle podcasts. So I do play a little bit. And I was at a concert. A guy named Glenn Tilbrook, who is one half of the songwriting partnership for my favorite band, Squeeze. And he was playing this tiny venue. I think it was Last Exit Live. And he does stuff during his shows, like if solo shows, not Squeeze shows, but during solo shows, he'll do things like invite audience members up onto the stage to sing, or you know he'll like walk out into the crowd. And one time I saw a show of his where. It was at the relocated Nita's Hideaway just before it closed down. And it was a bill that had Jill Sobule and John Doe from X and Glenn Tilbrook. So that was kind of a once-in-a-lifetime gig as well. But he had audience members take two chairs, and then he would stand on one and then move to the other one, and you would move the chairs around the room, and he created his own like revolving stage. So stuff like that. And on this particular occasion, I've seen him many, many times, and but never on an occasion where he would invite somebody up to play. And on this occasion he did, and like nobody was going up to take the offer. It was during a song called "Take Me, I'm Yours," which is one of their more famous ones. And also, I know dozens of Squeeze songs by heart, and that is one that I did not know the chord progression to. But nobody was going, and he like actually was gonna just move on and you know like do his solo or whatever. He just wanted somebody to play rhythm while he soloed. So nobody was going, and this was sort of the impetus for the way that I've lived my life for probably about, I guess, the last 10 years or so, which is that I'm just going to ignore the voice in the back of my head that tells me I can't do something or shouldn't do something or, you know, give in to the fear and whatchamacallit, fright, whatever. That fear and fright are kind of the same thing. But so I just ran up there. I just stopped thinking, and I went up there, and he asked me if I wanted to play the acoustic he had sitting there or his, like, awesome black Telecaster. And so I pointed at the Telecaster, and so I started playing that. And then I let him know that I didn't know the chords. And he's like, okay, that's all right. And then he just like shouted him out, and I played, and he even let me solo just a little bit. And it was awesome. I actually came down off of the stage and had people tell me that I played better than the opener. So that's my once in a lifetime story. Thank you.
Guys, keep it going for Jared. That is a super rad story. And I feel like not all bands are that cool. So when things like that happen, it's awesome. Super amazing. All right, guys. Our next storyteller is a regular, but she hasn't been here in a while. And she's busy. And you might not recognize her because her hair's not pink anymore. Put your hands together for Marina.
Hey. Okay. I'm going to take this off the stand because I'm too short. So once in a lifetime. So I was trying to think of something to come up with tonight. I was talking with my boyfriend over the phone because he's kind of having his own once in a lifetime experience right now. He just left on tour yesterday with his band. It's their first tour. It's down the East Coast. I'm like super excited for him. And I'm like, what am I doing with my life? Just asked me tonight when I was talking about once in a lifetime, he's like, what was it that made you want to do acting? Like, what show was it that got you into it? And I had to stop and think about that because I was like, what, like, I don't know. And for those of you who don't know me, I do like a bit of community theater. I started doing it in high school. I mostly do plays and Shakespeare. I'm not really a big musical person because I can't dance and I can only kind of sing. But my first play was I don't remember what it was called. It was in like sixth or seventh grade, and I was playing like an orphan, and just, you know, some stupid little thing like that. And but I just remember like really enjoying the experience of like rehearsing with other people and like getting to build this story together. And so I kept doing it all through high school, despite the fact that like my high school theater teacher like hated me. Which was fair, like if you knew high school me. But it wasn't until about 2 years after I graduated high school, because I stopped doing theater after I graduated, and then I started again doing a production of Macbeth. And there's this whole thing with Macbeth where you're, yeah, so someone's freaking out. Yeah, you're not supposed to say it in a theater, but this is not a theater. This is, we're storytelling. It's different. Okay, it's a Scottish play. Okay, or Mackers or whatever you want to call it. I try to respect people's adherence to that rule. I don't really believe in the curse, but I'm not going to tempt fate other than what I just did. But yeah, so I was doing the Scottish play, and the particular company that I was with, it was called Grassroots Shakespeare, and they're not around anymore because the board kind of dissolved after everyone went their separate ways, like to grad school or moved to a different state or something like that. And it was my first time acting in 2 years, and the casting process was a little different than like your standard casting process where you go up in front of a director and do a monologue, and then you go to callbacks, and they're like, cool, we want to offer you this role. With Grassroots, it was you all got together, like whoever was auditioning, like all came at the same time. You all auditioned in front of each other. You got feedback on your monologue, and then you did it again, taking that feedback into account. And then everyone would like vote for who they wanted to be in the cast, like not necessarily the roles yet. And then those people would vote on the roles that they wanted other people to play. So it was like a very collaborative sort of process. And they voted me to play Lady M, the female lead. And I was like, what? I haven't acted in 2 years. This is really exciting. And I was not prepared to play a role of that caliber, like, at all. But I still had a ton of fun with it, and especially because opening night. So the whole thing with the Scottish play is that there's a curse surrounding it that either the witches that Shakespeare wrote about actually cursed the play for, like, stealing their story or whatever it was. And opening night of the show was in October of, like, 2015, and it was looking kind of cloudy all day, and we're like, oh, it's probably going to be fine. It was Shakespeare in the Park. Like, we built the stage ourselves out in this park in Mesa, and it started raining about halfway, about two acts into the production. If you're not familiar with Shakespeare, they're typically, like, five-act productions, and we had shortened ours to about, like, an hour runtime. But it started raining on us, and it was outside. There was, like, no cover. It was really cool because when it started raining, it was, like, right after this murder scene. So my friend Ethan, who is playing Mackers, is, like, standing on the stage, and he's, like, delivering this great monologue. And he's got, like, the fake blood on his hands, and it just starts, like, running down his arm, and it looks really creepy. And then one of the company members is like, hey, we're going to stop the production because it's raining. But everyone in the audience was like, we still want to see it. So there was this little Ramada nearby, and so we just moved there. Everybody stayed, and we got to perform it there. And Lady M has, like, this monologue where she's, like, losing her mind. And so, like, instead of doing that up on a stage, I got to, like, get all up in people's faces and, like, be crazy. And it was really fun. And when I was talking about that to Thomas, my boyfriend tonight, I realized that, like, I've had a moment like that in almost every show that I've done in the past, you know, 3.5 years now. And while I know that I want to go on to work in film, and I'm kind of more interested in that as, like, a medium in terms of acting, I also really value, like, the theater experiences that I have, because every show is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Like, the show that you were performing with, the group of people that you were performing it with, will never be performed the same way, you know, even night to night, and it will never happen again, and it's always going to be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and I really love that. So while I don't necessarily want to do theater forever, I love every moment that I get to have within it, and every moment that I get to act and experience with other people, and the stories that we get to build and create, and the ways that we get to affect other people. And so Thomas is saying, you know, even if you haven't found, like, that one production that really stands out, like, you keep giving yourself these opportunities to have once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. And I think that doesn't apply to theater. That doesn't just apply to theater. Like, you can find once-in-a-lifetime opportunities in, like, almost every facet of your life just by changing the way that you look at things. Because, you know, someone may not think that, like, a dodgeball competition is that exciting, but to other people it's like, no, this was the coolest thing. And it is, just because of the way that you decide to look at it. So, yeah, that's my story.
One more time for Marina, please. I love the point that you brought up with the once-in-a-lifetime with each and every show that you do. Because just like here, even though we host this week after week, the show is always different every week. Different stories, different storytellers, different perspectives. And sometimes, you know, things either go perfectly or they just don't. And we've definitely had a couple of shows where it's like, yikes, why do we do this? But no, that's never been in question. But we do this for you guys, and we do this for, you know, to see this community grow. And it's a wonderful experience, and glad we get to share this with you. Speaking of reasons why we do this for the new storytellers and the new perspectives. Introducing a new storyteller to Chatterbox, please help me welcome Deborah.
My mother and grandmother were pregnant at the same time. A week after I was born, my grandmother gave birth to a boy, my uncle, little Stephen. We grew up together like brother and sister. As we got older, he wanted me to call him Uncle Stephen. I'm not calling you uncle. You're a kid like me. When we both turned 9, he ordered me to call him Uncle Stephen. It's a sign of respect. Call me uncle. He thought he could tell me what to do. I told you, a real uncle is a man who is big, a grown-up who looks like an uncle. You're going to call me Uncle Steve or I'm going to beat you up. Oh, yeah? Well, I'm bigger than you. I pounded him into the ground and got him to cry uncle. Grandma Olive, Stephen's mom, has many fruit trees in her yard. Coconut, naysberry, ackee, the national fruit of Jamaica, and that big old mango tree right smack in the middle. One summer when I was queen of the tree climbers, Stephen's outside my window yelling for me to come outside and play. Psst, Debbie, look. I'm doing homework, dummy. Some people do, you know. Look, Debbie, look. He runs inside and starts waving a dollar bill in front of my face. You want this dollar? I'll give it to you if you climb up the mango tree with me. He's gonna pay me a dollar to climb a tree? That's like paying a fish to swim. A dollar can buy me and my friends candy for a whole week. I looked at my homework and suddenly realized spelling don't pay. I run outside and climb up the mango tree like a lizard. If they had climbing mango tree in the Olympics, I could have brought home the gold for Jamaica. So, here I am pretty close to the top of the mango tree when slowpoke little Stephen, who believed me I'm not calling uncle, finally gets up here. He just started being bigger than me. Okay, give me the dollar. Wait, first I want you to do what I say. I'm not calling you uncle. I don't care what you call me. I have something I want to show you. He unzips his pants. I'll give you the dollar. But first, I'll show you mine, and then you show me yours. Fair deal? It's a sin. Pastor White says it's a sin. We'll burn in hell. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. I ain't showing you nothing. Give me the dollar and I'll take a look at yours. I never saw anybody hand over money so fast. He was so excited. I'm gonna get to see it. I always wondered what it looked like. I know, God, I shouldn't be doing this, but maybe it's only half a sin if I just take a quick look and don't touch anything. I inch closer. He pulls out what looks like a snake with one eye. You know, when you grow up, there's so many exciting things in the world. Some are simple things. You see a cake rise. How did it do that? Amazing. When you first see a giraffe, wow, look at that neck. It changed my whole idea about what a neck could be. Surprises on top of surprises. And now, at this tender age, I learned that my 9-year-old uncle has a snake between his legs. You know, when Alice goes through the looking glass into Wonderland, That's where I was. For me, my Uncle Stephen had a Mad Hatter in his pants. Touch it. Did you hear that? He wants me to touch it. I felt like I was falling down the rabbit hole. That'll be $2 more, please. He gives it to me. All of a sudden, I had power and money. And money equals candy. This is a great business. Steven's snake starts growing right before my eyes. I'm getting out of this tree before somebody sees us. I pray every morning and night for God to forgive me. God, please forgive me. Please forgive me. But every Sunday I was up in the mango tree. Take another look. Take another touch. $2. $4. The price went up every week. I was in a bull market. Every day I would go to school with a pocket full of money and buy anything I wanted for me and my friends. Charmaine, what you want? Leslie, get whatever you want, man. Stephen, where's my Uncle Stephen? He got sent away to boarding school and my whole economy dried up. So now I had no money but a big bag of guilt. I started praying a whole lot more.
Guys, keep it going for Deborah. Thank you for sharing that story. Also, setting the bar real high for the newcomers. I appreciate that. Only quality, only the best at Chatterbox, guys. All right, we've got a couple more storytellers left. One of them isn't me. Yes, it is. But we'll get to that in a minute. But first, we have a regular who hasn't been here in a while, but we're glad to have her. Put your hands together for Joy.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been here, and when I saw the theme for tonight, I was like, oh, I'm not gonna speak, you know, because I don't really have any once in a lifetime moment stories to tell, you know. Well, there was that one time when I, you know, got to do a photo shoot where a makeup artist did my makeup and put me on the cover of his book, but that, you know, I had like all these bad thoughts in my head, or like I didn't enjoy it as much as I should have. And there was that one time I went backpacking around Europe for a summer with my sister and my cousin after they graduated from college, but I was depressed the whole entire time. I mean, when you look at my journal, it's like, oh, I'm sitting here in the Louvre and I'm just like so sad because I don't have a boyfriend and I don't know what I'm gonna do when I get back to school next semester. So when I think about, like, I actually do have a lot of interesting and awesome experiences that I've had in life, but they've all had this tainting of, or just covered with anxiety and depression, because I didn't really realize I suffered from it all my life until it just became like a major problem as I was growing up and becoming an adult. And so I guess the once in a lifetime opportunity that I really want to talk about, the story that is probably the most positive in my life, is probably the most miserable moment I had. But I got out of a really bad relationship in probably about like 2012 or something. So I was an adult. I was working a full-time job in a cubicle and miserable. And I was in this year and a half relationship with a guy that just wasn't very nice to me. And I finally got out of that relationship and thought, you know, Joy, you're not really dating the best guys. Like, you're kind of always in these moments with guys that really don't treat you well. So, like, I don't know, like, this one common thread or common denominator in these situations is you. Like, what are you doing to attract these kind of guys? What are you doing to accept this kind of treatment? So I did what I was really scared to do, but I went to therapy for the first time in my life, and I met this really awesome therapist. He looks like Papa Smurf. I still hang out with him to this day. Like, he's awesome. And I actually started going to him, and it took about a year or two, and we were, you know, we were meeting like once a month, and I'd go in and just tell him about all my, you know, the things that happened to me in my childhood and in college, and he would, you know, like validate me and say, yeah, that was awful. And it's like, yeah, thank you. Like, it was awful. I was a total victim. And it wasn't until like 4 years of this process, like I was sitting there with him one day and I thought that I had figured some stuff out, but he was like, you know, it's interesting. Most people that come in here, they're here for like a year, maybe 2 years max, and we've been working together for 4 years. And I was like, yeah, I guess not that much has changed. I mean, I come in here every once in a while and I think I'm fine, and the next thing you know, I'm bawling my eyes out, kind of back at square one. And so when he kind of set the timeline for me, I realized, man, I haven't been doing any of the like homework that you've been giving me. I've been coming in here and reading the books and highlighting things and having these moments, but haven't really actually tried to put things into practice in terms of working on shame and working on anxiety and working on my unrealistic expectations of life and stuff. So it wasn't until this one time, it was in December, he gave me a book to read. And it's called, I think it's called A Guide to Rational Living. And I was reading this book, and it was talking about our irrational belief systems and how we have in our minds, it doesn't matter what kind of life you've come from, but as a child and as a human being, you don't get a rule book. So you're taking all this information from your experiences and creating these rules and these logics that you put in your mind as how to live and how the world works. And a lot of times they're very irrational and we don't even realize that we're doing it. And so there's this one part about looking at your life in terms of perfection and having to have things perfect. And what are the rules that you live by? And one of them that really spoke to me was this success factor. And I was reading the story, I was reading the woman's story in the book, and it really spoke to me, and I thought, oh my gosh, yeah, all my life, I have lived by the rule that I must be successful, or I should die, I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't, if I'm not going to be successful in life, then I'm wasting resources, I'm wasting my parents' time, I'm wasting everyone else's time, I'm wasting other resources that can go to valuable people, like I shouldn't be here. And then I had to think, okay, well, if it's the option is be successful or die, what is my definition of success? And my definition of success was I have to be the best or be perfect at whatever I'm doing. So be perfect or die was what was going on in my head for my entire life. And that was the moment was just, I stood there kind of just shocked, like, oh my gosh. This is such a harsh, harsh rule to live by. Like, why can't I just be myself? And that was the moment when I finally saw, after 4 years of working and crying on this couch, after 36 years of living a life with amazing opportunities, but I was never fully present, never fully enjoying them, to see that I do have value. Sorry. And that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity because ever since then, I've been able to do things like this, to not be afraid, to come up and speak my story, to be judged, to try new things. And I guess my moral of the story, I apologize, I didn't know I was going to get this emotional. The moral of the story is if you can look at those irrational beliefs, if you can look at some of those rules that you might not even know you have set up in your mind and really truly question them, you can change your life. Thank you.
Keep it going for Joy, please. I'm so glad that you told your story and that you were able to share that up here with us. And You touched on something, especially at the beginning of your story, when you said that you weren't sure if you had a story to share, and if you had a story to share for this theme of once in a lifetime. And I think that goes through a lot of our heads, you know, week after week with storytelling. At this show is, do I have a story? And that's a common theme, especially for, you know, Jesse and I who are here hosting. Some nights we're not sure if the list is going to be full. We may have to tell a story, and it's, do I have a story for this? And the answer is yes. And that's the wonderful thing about storytelling, is that it's, everybody has a story, and everybody has a uniquely tailored story to how they experience things and how they go through life. And so, yes, every one of you has a story, and thank you for sharing some of those with us. And which leads me to our final storyteller of the night. The reason why we're all here, the reason why we get to tell and share our stories with one another. Please help me welcome Jesse.
All right, guys. For those of you that are new here, this is going to be a strange announcement for you, but for those of you who have been here with us for a while, this announcement is tough. It's tough for me to make. It was tough for me to write the post before I came to the show tonight, but Chatterbox is ending. I've really enjoyed doing this show, but it's been 2.5 years, and I think just through my personal experience and growth and things like that, like, I've come to a place where this show needs to, you know, kind of hand off the mic to someone else. There are so many shows in the Valley, and the next two shows that we have, you'll get plenty of resources and information about other things that you can check out for storytelling, for open mics, and other creative outlets, because I don't want you all to stop, you know, sharing your truth or expressing yourselves in the way that makes you feel the most comfortable. There are plenty of shows that can take that on and can welcome you there. So that's the announcement first and foremost. Our last show is going to be May 1st, so it's 2 weeks from now, next week, and then the following week will be the last one. We're going to make it a fun celebration, so make sure you come out for that. It's going to be a good time, hoping to get a DJ, so it's going to be really fun. Jerry's already dancing for it, guys, so get excited. But invite your friends. It's going to be a really fun just celebration of kind of what this has been so far. So my once-in-a-lifetime story. Oh, Joy, you set me up to cry. my once-in-a-lifetime story is the opportunity to host this show, the opportunity to put this on for people week after week, and to meet so many wonderful, amazing, beautiful, unique people. I found storytelling after a really terrible experience in a relationship that ended in physical assault. And it was through those experiences and the people that I met when I first started storytelling 5 years ago that led me to be able to have this show myself. And I had it for a year over at the Grand, which is across the street and across the light rail. And then I moved it over here, which has been a far better location. Sorry, Grand. Just because it's a wonderful space, it's very warm and welcoming, and there's already a community here of people. So it was fun to kind of build on that. But it's grown into something I never thought it could be. And I think for me that was the coolest thing, because like Joy, I think I share some of that like weird perfectionism success thing. And when it started to take off and Chatterbox started to get some traction, I was excited because I was like, oh, like, this is the thing that people like, and like, people want to do this. And I was worried about just doing the show by myself, because doing a weekly show on your own, lugging sound equipment and setting up lights and making sure the stage is ready, because the venue, not this venue, didn't have, you know, things swept or set up or anything, like, and just doing that, it was hard. And I did it every week because I loved it. And there were days that it was so hard just to be here because of shit in my life, because of how I was feeling that day. And I knew, I was like, you know, like, push yourself, like, you're going to be annoyed on the way there, but when you get there, it's going to be wonderful. And it was every time. And it turned into this space for me. Chatterbox is like my church, you know, like, other people are religious and they go somewhere every week, or they talk to people, or they have a group of people every week that they do something with that, you know, brings them enlightenment or gives them some sense of community and family. I'm sorry, guys. This show has been so wonderful. And everyone that comes to this show and talks about it or shares it with friends or people that have moved away that still tell me I'm so excited to get the posts for Chatterbox, even though I live in LA or New York or wherever they live, like I listen to the podcast still. Or having people tell me, thank you for creating a space where I could tell my secrets or share things that I didn't think I could share and find people that supported me. I've never felt like that before. I've never felt like I was responsible in just such a small way, because I'm just one person. But like, to create a space where people felt like they could be themselves and they could have the same feeling that I felt when I started this 5 years ago. And that's all I ever wanted to give people, was that feeling of finding your voice and getting that back on a stage in front of strangers. And it feels so weird, but it is the coolest, most empowering thing that I have ever felt. And I'm so glad that other people, and so many people, have been able to experience that here. And I'm happy, and I'm proud of kind of what's become of this show. And I'm so thankful for Estevan for coming on and supporting me and bringing the show some life that it needed when I was having a hard time. And it's just, it's been really wonderful. So all that blubbering to say I'm thankful for the opportunity, because I will never have this opportunity again to create a space that has connected so many people to myself, but to each other and their community, to share perspective and be vulnerable and have the opportunity to find their voice. So the theme for our last show on May 1st is empowerment, because that is hope. That's what I hope everyone in this room can feel the same way I felt on that stage 5 years ago. Thank you, guys.
Keep that going just a little bit longer. Really, Jesse, just thank you. Thank you for creating the space. Thank you for welcoming so many people to it. And thank you for allowing me to share it. And this has been a once-in-a-life opportunity for a lot of people, and not just yourself, but also myself. And the empowerment to go on to not necessarily bigger, not necessarily better things, but just other things, and to be able to carry that with us. And for you, I know that whatever lies before you is going to be great, because look at what you've already built. So thank you again, everybody, and we look forward to seeing you next week. And our theme is happy accidents, you know? Serendipity, happy accidents, you know, like the happy accident of me discovering the show one day with the help of a friend and Jesse asking me to be a part of it. So come out next week. We'll be here. Thank you.
This has been a Hoon Waddle production. If you enjoyed this podcast, why not check out one of our other fine podcasts available from hootandwaddle.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or any number of podcast apps. If you'd like to support Hoot and Waddle and get access to an exclusive member-only podcast, receive discounts on merch, and more, go to patreon.com/hootandwaddle. We'll be right back.